Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach, or at least I did before Corona. Once we've been in shutdown, it's been working from home, working from the couch, working from the den, the living room, the lobby, wherever you can get work done in your own space, right? And it doesn't mean that you work 9 to 5 anymore or 8 to 3. Suddenly you're working from whenever you wake up to pretty much whenever you go to sleep. And there's goods and bads about that too. Certainly a bad thing is we don't get to see our students. We don't get to see our colleagues. We don't get to see our friends. And it can feel a little lonely. So every day of the school year, since we've made the shift to Corona, I've tried to offer up daily instructional tips from a guy who works in instructional coaching as an author, a speaker, presenter, and a classroom teacher myself. I don't pretend to be an expert. Anybody in this time who's pretending to be an expert, I hope to goodness that they're infectious disease specialists. But as somebody who is working in this space, not just at my own school, but in consulting and working with schools all over the country, I do try to give the best of what I'm hearing so we can all get back to whatever the new normal is sooner than later. And that means making plans for the school year that is going to be the 2020 into 2021 school year. Because for many of us, we're wrapping up our schools either this week or next week, or right at the end of May into June. And we have to think about, okay, well, how do we get back to school? What does that look like for the fall? So this week, we're going to focus entirely on episodes devoted to what could it look like if we come back in the fall. And I heard a quote from a sports league on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, who said, look, I don't have any good ideas. We have ideas, but they're all varying degrees of bad. And this week we're going to talk about those varying degrees of bad, of what it means to open schools or not reopen schools in the fall. Dr. Fauci says he believes it's a bridge too far. Senator Rand Paul said respectfully, hey, Dr. Fauci, you're just one voice. We have to have more voices in this conversation. I agree. So as educators, I want to start these conversations or join these conversations or welcome us into these conversations and continue them on Twitter and really all summer long. We'll have more podcasts. They won't be every day through the summer, but we will have a chance to keep the conversations rolling. So let's talk. But first things first, if you like what you're hearing, I have a website, Adrenaline Rush. It's all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. I have a bunch of tools and templates and toys and resources, open source. Just click a button and it's yours to have. Hooray! I wrote a book called Adrenaline Rush, which is about, again, game-changing student engagement. If that sounds like something you're interested in, check it out on the website. If you like this podcast, there are new episodes every day for every day of the school year, so long as I'm still in school. We've done like 30 or 40 episodes since the shift to the coronavirus shutdown. And like I said, new episodes every school day, Monday through Friday, as long as I'm still in school. This is my last full week. And if you want to talk further, like I said, this is just the start of a conversation. It's not the end of it. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Meehan, E-D-U. That's Meehan, I like the last name. M as in Mary, E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy. And E-D-U, like the education thing. If you like the podcast, feel free to subscribe and leave comments and hit me up on Twitter. We can talk further about things that you want to keep talking about, inspired by what we talked about here. Because today, I want to talk about what does it mean to come back? And if we come back, how do we come back? I want to talk about color coding, because you might have heard this idea of a stoplight or like phases and waves. And really, that's an easy model to kind of adapt across the board, because we recognize that there is no one solution for all schools and all people. Can't be. And when we listen, it can get very polarized and very heated on Twitter very quickly, but we do have to recognize and check our own privilege, because certain areas are just more intimately affected by a pandemic than others might be. If you're in a very urban area, if you're in a very congested area, if you're in a very metropolitan area or a very just developed area, the likelihood that you have people around you is much, much higher than if you're in a more remote, a more rural, a more agrarian, a more laid-back space. And so state by state, we've seen some sort of fluctuations here. I do want to point out that I find myself personally frustrated that the issue has become seemingly so politicized very quickly, right? If you're a political left, it's we can't open schools or kids will die. And if you're on the political right, it's we can't close schools or businesses will die. The real issue, as it is with most things, is certainly much more nuanced than that. But there is wisdom in both sides of these things. And so I'm going to try whatever I can in this podcast through the week to recognize my own privilege and to say there's probably some wisdom in either side of these things. Neither side, I believe, is actively seeking to kill kids and kill teachers, and anything that would be presented as such would be false. But I do think that we as educators want to make sure we get it right, because we have one shot at this. If we open up too soon, the whole thing becomes a cautionary tale about things we should not have done. And as lifelong learners, we should be learning from our own mistakes. And if we can prevent those mistakes, that's even better. So let's talk about some of that stuff this week. I'm going to talk about this idea of color coding. You may have heard the idea of opening schools or opening businesses in multi-tiered things, like the red level, the orange level, the yellow level, and the green level, like threat levels, I guess. I guess threat level midnight is not on that four-part point list. But what we'll do this week is talk about opening schools from that red to orange to yellow to green. And we'll break it down that way so that red is no-go, no-fly zone. We work from home 100%. Orange is we go in, but we're likely to be in and out like a yo-yo based on pandemics because you can't anticipate when the next one comes back. Yellow would be the idea that we are making the plan to go back, but in a modified schedule, whether that means half days or half time or half students or half schedules, or we'll talk all about that, I guess, on Thursday. And then Friday of this week, we'll be talking about green. Green means go. What would it look like if we can go back in? One of the benefits of waiting till Friday for the green all is well episode is a lot can change in a pandemic. This is a rapidly evolving situation. And as we watch trends over days, as we get new data, we often say this about instructional coaching. Instructional coaches need to have their finger on the pulse of educational research, and whatever suggestions or proposals they must make should be data-informed. I'm not saying data-driven, but data-informed. We should be informed by what it means to be human, what it means to be empathetic, what it means to be aware. But looking at numbers and statistics, actuarial tables and likelihoods, probabilities, things like that, one of my biggest frustrations as an instructional coach is when I present the data to people, they say, yeah, that's not what I've seen in my own classroom. I'm like, sure, that's fair, but that's also in a bubble. If you back up outside of that bubble, anecdotally, sort of falls apart and data kind of wins the day, right? But they'll say, well, I've never seen that. I'm like, well, of course you can. I mean, that's you can't see your own ears. That's how it works. And so I'm just trying to speak to larger trends of what schools are doing, what we're seeing in some places, cautionary tales and lessons that we can learn from, and then using the data to really ground as much of the conversation as we can. So 4 days after today, we'll start with the red stuff tomorrow. We'll do the orange stuff the next day, then the yellow on Thursday, and the green on the day of Friday. But just as a general overview, again, some disclaimers, some blanket notes, and some things to take in consideration. Different states will have to move at different rates. That just has to be understood. This weekend, I had a chance to see my folks who live in New Jersey in a very quiet, very sleepy, very rural town, which is a lot of farmland. I grew up within 100 yards of, I think it's probably actually 120 yards, of my elementary school, middle school. My town's elementary middle school, there was one school for like 50 years. And then like in the, I think, late 70s, early 80s, they finally went and built an elementary school to break off from that, you know, school, like the township school. So I graduated my middle school, 8th grade graduation, in a class of, I think, 32 students. Those 32 students would go on to a high school that had about 1,000 people. It's a little bit more manageable, more traditionally sized. But I grew up in a town where it was quiet. It was sleepy. Most of the people there were farmers or people who had jobs where one parent worked in, let's say, New York City and made the daily commute in on I-78 or took the train. But you wouldn't know it from the town that we lived in. There are no traffic lights. There are no delivery restaurants. There's very little in the way of diversity. It's very quiet, very laid back, very salt of the earth kind of working class people. My dad was the mayor by night for the late part of my high school years of our town. And he was a salesman by day and a carpenter by day. But it was like a town council that met like once a month, and he was the mayor elected to it because it was like a rotating, if you were elected to town council, then I guess every 3 years, one of the members of the council was the town's mayor. But when you have a part-time mayor, that pretty much tells you the size of that town. So they're not making big decisions, like take that and compare it to the type of big decisions you make, like Muriel Bowser is making here in Washington, D.C., where I now live. It's a big difference. It's not to say the work that my dad did is any less important. He did things that were hugely important. He built parks. He made sure to take part in civil services and tax law and things like that to make sure that people were safe and supported through town. Sure. But the scope and the daily, impact of the mayor's managerial decisions is not the same as Washington, D.C., where Muriel Bowser stands up and says, we're going to close all the D.C. public schools. Big difference. In truth, a mayor in a small town may not even have that jurisdiction. That may go to a school board or to a superintendent. And so when we're talking about what this could look like as we open up, it's going to be different. If you're in a more remote area, if you're in a more rural area, there are schools in Georgia, schools in I think Michigan or Nebraska, schools in Ontario who are already talking about coming back or letting teachers back in the building. There are schools in Europe who have made their way back. And there are goods and bads about that. Certainly it's good to see everybody again. But the question is, are we safe? We have to talk about that. If you're more congested, more metropolitan areas, like I said, here in Washington, D.C., it's a different world. The state of Virginia just lifted its stay-at-home order for most of the state, but kept the stay-at-home order in place for two remaining weeks here in Northern Virginia because of its proximity to Washington, D.C. Likewise, the state of Maryland lifted their stay-at-home to make it a safer-at-home order. But again, the areas closest to the city are in a different, timeline. Same with schools in Baltimore. And that makes sense because you get one chance to get this right. If you think we're good and we're parachuting from the sky, and we're like, okay, I think I'm close enough to the ground, I can take the parachute off. You get one shot, or you break your legs, or your entire body falls apart. And that's where our schools are right now. Do we know for sure it's safe to reopen them? Good news is this year is pretty close to being done, so whether we did it right or did it wrong or just did it, it's over. We do have the chance to put it in a box, put it on the shelf, and say, all right, let's learn from this. But looking to the fall, what does that mean for us as educators? And that's a good question because we've talked about the idea of furlough. We've talked the idea about jobs being lost. We talked about the idea of remote trainings being necessary, remote teaching being necessary. As an educator, if it means that you keep your job, do you feel comfortable being required to do some level of training over the course of the summer, whether that's 3 hours for a Google certification or 3 days for an online training with modules you dial into or 3 weeks or something in the summer about how to be 101 certified for being the best distance teacher ever. Ultimately, if you have a teacher's union, there's different conversations that can be had. If you're working at a private school or a smaller school, again, not every school will have the chance to open at the same size because some of these schools need to make these decisions fast because if they don't, the teachers go away, they don't see them until the fall, and then whoops, just kidding, we don't have a plan in place because as an educator, you know when you disappear for the summer and people go all over the place, it's really hard to get them back into one spot. So we're talking about a lot of things here at once, right? A lot of moving pieces, a lot of balls to juggle in the air, and we want to make sure we get it right. So tomorrow we'll talk about what it looks like to be at threat level red. And the red threats here on Tuesday, that means zero in-school teaching. I guess if you're talking about the very far political left, this is where they start. The idea that it's not safe to be back in a physical building to open people up to the infectious diseases that are no vaccine with no universal treatment standards. If we are in threat level red, spending a whole year at red, we'll talk about that tomorrow. Then moving on Wednesday, the notion of an orange pandemic, which is, okay, we're going to try to come back, but we have to be realistic that there need to be units that you can be prepared to teach remotely because there will be a little bit in, a little bit out, not unlike snow days, but in this case, it's lockdown days or quarantine days because we're trying to get ahead of this idea of if there's a second wave of coronavirus and or if we are in a new normal where it's just not possible to have a vaccine before the end of the school year. On Thursday, we'll move through the yellow threats. And the yellow threats is, okay, we're doing pretty good, but let's keep our schools safe. And in order to keep those numbers down, to keep everything manageable, we're going to have a halftime school or a halftime class load or a halftime teaching schedule where we put students in during some hours of the day and then we take them out for some days or take some days off. We'll go through all of the logistics there. And then finally on Friday, we'll say, okay, best case scenario, we're green, good to go. And this is where the political right is, the people on the very far political right. Is we want to get our schools open as fast as we can. And I want to point out, nobody here is a monster, or at least I hope not, because for some students, it's safer to be at school than it is to be at home. And again, checking our own privilege. Yes, it seems monstrous to send kids back into a place where they will die, but if kids are staying home and they have no access to food or their parents have no ability to teach them from home, Students are being left to their own devices without internet access. If there's 20 million schools where our students in the United States who don't have access to meals every day, and or students who are dealing with extreme poverty or domestic violence at home, to put them in a place where they're not safe is not good. So we got to figure out not the lesser of two evils, but the safer of two options. So we'll talk about that on Friday. And these are nuanced, multifaceted conversations that are hard. And again, I always, in my job as a coach, try to presume positive intent. I hope you were able to stick with me this week while we really hash out the goods and bads of each of these things. Like I said, there's no perfect scenarios. There's a bunch of different degrees of bad. Hopefully we can minimize some of that bad through these conversations. And like I said, continue the conversations on Twitter. Hit me up on the machine at mehan.edu. We can talk this week or forever about how to make this better, because we do want to get it right. For whenever the new normal kicks in, we want to be there for our kids and for our classes. Stay safe, stay healthy. I'm looking forward to this week's episodes. It's our last full week of school before my school hits for the summer break, and I know I have a ton of work to do to get prepared for that. So I'd love to lean in and listen with you and figure out how we can do it better. And be safe, be healthy, and we'll be back here tomorrow. Thanks again.